Tonight to hear from Rabbi Schechter, not a guest shiur because we have the great success of having Rabbi Schechter here, not only to give these shiur, but also to teach many classes, which hopefully you have taken advantage of either in the past, present, or in the future. It's always an amazing opportunity to hear from Rabbi Schechter, but I think there's one other point I want to add specifically about the opportunity that we have. Thank God we have many guest speakers who are really amazing and give amazing Torah that hit each of us in a different way. But we have the opportunity, not just only tonight, but really over the course of the year, is to also spend time over the course of the year getting to ask questions, getting to have conversations, getting to know Rabbi Schechter. Generally during this slot on Tuesdays between 6 and 8 p.m., when he's not going to be giving one of these type of shiurim over the course of the year, he's in the Beis Medrash, here available to meet, to talk, to answer questions, etc. Not an opportunity to take lightly, not an opportunity to let pass by, and really an opportunity to take advantage of. So everyone should know, Tuesday from 6 to 8 p.m., again, this shiur, maybe just if this is the first time you're coming to one of these shiurim, or it's one of many times, should be an impetus to go up through Schechter and take advantage of the opportunity to spend time with him during the year. Without further ado, Schechter.
Good evening to all of you and welcome back. I feel so blessed to be here and to learn together with all of you. Last year was my first year in Stern College, and for me, it was a very meaningful and uplifting experience. And I thank you for allowing me to have the opportunity to learn and grow together with everyone. Rabbi Fine puts together so much phenomenal programming, and I know he gives the credit to all of those who come and to participate and who speak, but he has a tremendous amount of energy, and he really infuses so much into make this a most meaningful experience and the greatest learning and growth experience that we can have. In the end of the day, you've all chosen to be here because you want to grow, because you want to grow not only in your studies, but you want to grow in your Yiddishkeit, in your Judaism, in your connection, in your understanding, in your appreciation. And that's why we're here. All the other things are also a part of our experience, but this is why we're here. If we were not here for this purpose, there are many other places in the world that we would be able to study and we would be able to spend our time. And I just implore, I beg you, to take advantage of these amazing years of your life when the responsibility that you have is limited pretty much to yourself, to your small circle of friends, to your small social circle before it grows, before you have families, before you have children to be concerned about. Now is really a time to be very selfish and to focus on your own growth and to focus on your own development and to build the fundamental foundations that all of us need to have a healthy, successful religious life moving forward. Ashreinu matov chalkeinu, how lucky we are to be here together, that we have chosen as a chevra, as a chabura, as a group of friends to be here and to learn and to study and to develop and to nurture our own spiritual growth. And Amir Tzashem, this should be the first of many, many opportunities that we have to make this commitment and to make it firm enough that even after we leave, we will continue to have that foundation inside of ourselves. I was asked to talk tonight a little bit about the time period that we're in, and I know there are going to be many sichas musar and many drushas and many discussions that are going to happen over the next couple of weeks. And I ask you to take advantage of all of them. Enjoy. I'm humbled by the crowd that is here tonight. And I know all of you are exhausted. And it's the beginning of a new semester. And everybody's trying to find their way and figure out where they belong and figure out what to do or what not to do, which classes to take, which classes to drop. I appreciate that you're all here to learn. I appreciate that everybody wants to grow together. And I thank you for making time to come this evening to try and be inspired with one another. I always feel uncomfortable at this time of year, especially as a rabbi in a community, in a shul. We are always expected and we are asked, and it is something that goes without saying, that we are supposed to inspire people, that we are supposed to somehow uplift their experience of tshuva. And I always find that very difficult. Number one, because who says that I'm doing such a great job myself in the process of tshuva? I'll be honest, I'm not. And I would imagine many of us in the room may not be doing the greatest of jobs either. And it's very difficult to speak about something that you have not mastered, to speak about something that you don't know how to do well. So that's the first thing that makes me very uncomfortable. Aside from that, how am I supposed to know what the experience of tshuva is going to mean to another person. Each one of us has our own struggles, our own difficulties, our own shortcomings. Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yasa tova lo yechda. There is no one in the world who is perfect. All of us have imperfections. Don't forget, when you start dating, if you haven't started yet, everybody in the world has imperfections. And guess what? You're not perfect either. And therefore, the person you're going to be looking for is not going to be the perfect person. You have to find somebody who has some kind of deficiency that you can manage, that you can handle, that you can grow together to try to fix. But you're not going to find the perfect person because nobody in the world is perfect. And everybody has things that they struggle with. And therefore, when it comes to the story of tshuva, it's something that for each person is something that is very unique. It's a journey that is something that is relevant to my life and to my experiences, to my shortcomings, and to my issues. So I find this to be a very uncomfortable position to be in. To talk about tshuva, to try to give ideas about tshuva, to try to inspire others. How should I know what's going to inspire someone else? How should I know what people need to work on? I remember vividly the first question I got when I sat in the Beis Medrash here last year in September was, Rav Schefter, I just came to Stern College. Can you tell me what is the avoda of Elul for our generation? And I was so terrified by that question because I called Dean Schefter that night and I said, I don't think I can sit in the Beis Medrash and answer questions because if this is what the questions are going to be, I have no idea what I'm supposed to respond. It's impossible for anybody to know what the avoda of tshuva kodesh el should be. And I don't think it's a generational question. I think it's a very individual, personalized one. So let's just talk generally about the issue. What I think about, what gives me comfort every year, is the mashal that is given by the Dubna Magid. The Dubna Magid writes that mashal and achei raglayim, he says there was somebody who was crippled. Somebody who needed the assistance of others to get around. And every night before he went to sleep, he obviously needed somebody to get him ready for bed, put him into his bed, and in the morning, he was waiting around for somebody to help him get up and get dressed. And this Nechei Raglayim is sleeping in the middle of the night, and suddenly he sees outside of the window, a couple of houses down, he sees that there is a raging fire. And he's terrified. He's terrified not only for the people that are inhabiting that house, but he's terrified for himself, very personally, because, as we know, fire can spread very rapidly, very quickly. And if he doesn't have somebody who's going to find him, he doesn't have a way of saving himself. He is so dependent on others. And he starts screaming and shouting, and nobody hears him. And he takes out a trumpet that is right next to his bed, and he starts blowing it as loud as he can. And finally, people wake up, and they say, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Look, there's a raging fire out there. And my hope was that I will inspire you to wake up. I will inspire you to run out of your house before there's a danger to your life. In order that while you save yourself, maybe somebody will also be gracious enough to save me." And the Dubna Magid said that every year, when he was asked to talk at this time of the year and to discuss some of his thoughts regarding tshuva, how am I supposed to know how to take care of that raging fire? Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Maaseres Yemei Tshuva is a raging fire right in front of us. You look out in the headlights and that's what you see. And you don't know what to do. And nobody knows the answer. Nobody knows the perfect solution. But my hope is, he said, at least if I try to share words of inspiration, maybe when somebody will be inspired and save themselves in the process of Tshuva, maybe they'll be kind enough to save me along with them as well. And that is my tefillah. I hope somebody will be somewhat inspired. And through that, you'll bring me along on your own journey through your process of tshuva and make it meaningful not only for yourself, but for all of us who are here. Rosh Hashanah is conventionally known as the Yom HaDin. What's very interesting about that is that in Chumash, there is no mention of that idea. The Torah does not tell us that Rosh Hashanah is a day of judgment. But yet in the Davening, we're all familiar with the line, "V'chol bo'i olam yavru v'fanecha kibnei marom." We are all familiar with the fact that on Rosh Hashanah, we pass before HaKadosh Baruch Hu in judgment. So it's something very serious. And as we know, serious things require preparation. When you get married, you don't just show up. I always used to say this until last week. I mean, now I'm saying it again, but Last week I was in Eretz Yisrael. It was a Talmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael who bumped into me and he says, "Rabbi Shechter, you're from the five towns, right?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "I heard something this week that I've never heard in my life." I don't know if he's joking or if he's serious, but he told me that he was invited by a family that he knows in the five towns. They should come. He should come to America. He said, "Why am I coming?" And they told him, "Well, you know, you're very close with the family. We're about to celebrate a family simcha. Our daughter is getting engaged. We're having a l'chaim. We're having a vart." And he said, "Why would I come in for an engagement? I'll come for the wedding." And they kept persuading him, "Come, come for the engagement." Turns out, of course, he didn't come. Why would he fly in to America just for an engagement? And he tells me that the next morning he woke up, and it turns out that they actually got married. Is this a true story?
Yeah.
What's the story? That's the whole thing. So, the mashal I used to give is, I guess they were so infatuated with each other, and they were nervous that somebody else was going to run away with the boy or the girl and get engaged or married to them. If they wouldn't solidify it, I don't know, I'm just kidding. But at the engagement party, the couple actually got married, which is very unusual. Don't try this at home. But I would say, anything serious in life requires preparation. Nobody shows up to a wedding without preparing. Nobody just decides one afternoon that they're going to get married, except for this lovely, wonderful couple who should have Amidas Yom HaMishanah and lots of Shalom Bayis. But that's not the norm. And everything requires preparation. What is the preparation for Rosh Hashanah? As we know, the preparation is the entire Chodesh Elul. Here we are, halfway through the month of Elul. And what I find very interesting about this is that although Elul is a time for reflection, it's a time for introspection, it's a time for us to contemplate where we are, where we're headed, what we've done, what we would like to do, what are your aspirations for the coming year, where is your life going, where would you want it to go, there is something that sometimes gets lost on many of us, and that is this somewhat arbitrary number of 40 that begins with Rosh Chodesh Elul and then culminates, the crescendo is on Yom HaKippur and 40 days later. What you'll notice, if you study enough in the Chumash, in Hashkafa, in Halacha, you will notice that the number 40 seems to be a number that constantly repeats itself in so many different contexts. We begin with Moshe Rabbeinu, who goes up to Shamayim three different times. And on each of those occasions, he is there in heaven for Arba'im Yom, he's there for 40 days and 40 nights. We go all the way back to Parshas Noach, where the Torah tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about to destroy the world. In another 7 days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises and warns that there's going to be a flood. It's going to last 40 days and 40 nights. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Nida that a couple has a right to pray, to daven, for one gender or the other. Some families want to have boys, some families want to have girls. Whenever people ask me, Baruch Hashem, I have five sons, five boys, people always say, "What's with the girl?" And I always say, the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed me with healthy children, I'll be very honest, I never have thought for one second about which gender this child is going to be. Never. It never has even crossed my mind for a second. It doesn't make a difference to me. I know so many people who are not blessed with children. I know people who don't have children easily. I know people who have no nachas from their children. I know people who have very sick children. I know people who have lost children. I don't think for one second whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me a boy or a girl. To me, it shouldn't be on the radar. It shouldn't matter at all. But the Gemara does describe such people who are concerned and consumed about what gender the child is going to be. And the Gemara says they have a right to daven. They have a right to be mispalo, that it should be one or the other. But once Arba'im Yom passes, once 40 days of the pregnancy have culminated, they are no longer able to offer such a tefillah. It is called a tefillas shav. It has already been determined what gender this child is going to be. And because of that, we assume that that is considered to be the time that it is solidified, the life of a child. Again, this recurrent theme of Arba'im Yom. The Navi Yonah that we're going to read on Yom HaKippurim by Mincha. Obviously, he's sent on a journey, on a mission, to go and warn the city of Nineveh that they need to do tshuva. And it's important for us to understand what the story of Yonah is all about. And there, in the context of that discussion, the Navi says, Od arba'im yom v'ninveh nehepeches. I want you to know you have 40 days, and then, if nothing changes, Nineveh is going to be overturned. Nineveh is going to be destroyed. If you haven't heard enough yet, we know that in order to go into a kosher mikveh, it has to have a measurement of arba'im sa, 40 measures of water. The Jewish people were 40 years wandering in the desert. And finally, as we're told, in Parshas Kisetze, the Torah tells us every once in a while you have somebody who is deserving of malchus, somebody who is deserving of lashes. Very specific set of circumstances, but there, the Torah says, how many times do we hit them? Both men and women are subject to the same punishment, arba'im yakenu, 40 lashes. Do you believe that all of this is coincidental? Writes the Maharal in his commentary, Gur Aryeh on Chumash. 40 is something that is by no means a coincidence. 40 is the amount of time that it takes to completely destroy and exterminate something, to get rid of it, like we find by the Mabul, Arba'im Yom, Arba'im Laila, like we find by hitting somebody 40 times to purge them of all the sin, to purge them of all that was impure. 40 days of Nineveh to destroy all that was and recreate themselves. 40 sa'an amikvah to get rid of the tumah, to get rid of an impurity. And 40 is also the amount of time necessary to create and to generate something new. And that really is what we find with Chodesh El. It's the opportunity to take everything that we have, to take everything that we know to be a constant in our lives, to take all that we believe was a given, to take all the things that we believe are just a part of who we are, and to realize that we have the opportunity to purge ourselves entirely from that reality and to recreate something entirely new. That's what the process of tshuva is all about, and that's what the special time of metamorphosis is really supposed to be for us, to give us the opportunity to revolutionize our own lives and to recondition and transform ourselves to be something different. The Shemi Shmuel, who was the son of the Avni Nezer, Reb Shmuel Bornstein, he writes in the early 1900s, he quotes from one of the early Hasidic Rebbes that tshuva einenu tala'i. Tshuva is not a band-aid. Tshuva is not a patch. Ela ka'adam shenafal min hagag v'neshtabru kol atzmosav. Rather, it's like a person who falls off of the roof and breaks every bone in their body. What does that mean? Tshuva is not a patch. Tshuva is like somebody who falls off the roof and breaks every bone in their body. I'm also really hot. You're on the student council, no? How do we get the air conditioner on? So tshuva is not a patch. Tshuva is like falling off the roof. What exactly does that mean? The Shemi Shmuel explains what it means is as follows. When somebody trips and they rip their clothing, you can go to the tailor, you can keep that shirt, you can keep that skirt, you can keep the article of clothing, just get a patch, get it sewn up. It will be the same. It doesn't redefine itself. It's the same item that it was, just with a little bit of alteration, and now it's back to the function that it originally had. When, God forbid, somebody has a terrible fall, ka'adam shenafal min hagag, somebody who goes through a traumatic experience and breaks every bone in their body, they need complete reconstructive surgery all over. Nothing about them remains the same. They may need a replacement of certain organs. They may need reconstructive surgery to make them look differently than they look now. They may need blood transfusions. Everything about them is new. And says the Shemi Shmuel, that's what tshuva means. It's not a taloi, it's not a patch, it's not a band-aid that you just go and have it fixed. It is the opportunity, ka'adam shenafal min agag, it's like a person who breaks everything that they had and has the opportunity to then reconstruct everything and start it all anew. Which is really, in essence, exactly how the Rambam describes the process of tshuva. The Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Beis, Halacha Dalid, when he outlines what the process looks like, midarkei ha-tshuva, what exactly is the derech to tshuva? How is a person supposed to get there? So he says that a person should feel remorse, a person should cry before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's important that we feel sincere about the feelings of tshuva. But then the Rambam says, part of the process is Mishana Shmo. You ever have the opportunity in a community, sometimes you have somebody who's very gravely ill, and we will do a Shinui Hashem, right? You ever on a Tehillim chat, and then they say, we're going to change the person's name. What is that, a game? We change somebody's name, like, oh, not you anymore, this person's not me anymore, so I'm going to be someone else. What is that? It's not a joke. It's from the Gemara. The assumption is, when you change your name, you can change your essence. And the Xera that was put down on this individual that had this name can now be changed because I now consider to be a new individual. Says the Rambam, that is precisely what we do when we go through the process of tshuva. We consider the possibility of being Mishana Shmo, of changing our actual name, to make ourselves have the opportunity of being a recreated human, of being a totally new entity, of being somebody who is not the old person that we thought ourselves to be, or that we always imagined ourselves being either. I know nothing about mystical topics at all, but what's striking about Chodesh Elul, if you ever look in the back of some Siddurim, they have the mazalos for each of the months of the year. You look at it, you don't really know what it means, you don't know what it highlights, you don't know what the significance is, maybe you do, I'm sorry, I don't. I don't know what it means. But if you look, what is the mazal of Chodesh Elul? Anybody knows? What is the mazal of Chodesh Elul? A besula, a virgin woman. Why is a besula the mazal of Chodesh Elul? What does that mean? So it is said in the name of the Ramban, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, because we know Chodesh Elul is ani l'dodi v'dodi li. When a husband and wife get married, a young man, a young woman, it's a beautiful relationship. It's very exciting. It's something fresh. It's something new. And we have the opportunity to think about Chodesh Elul and that marriage, that besula. That's what it's about. Beautiful. But Rav Shimshon Pinkus takes it further. And he says, but why a besula? Why a virgin woman? Why is that what this is all about? Explains Rav Shimshon Pinkus in his beautiful Sefer on Yom Noraim. He says, because Adam HaChote Nimsha Li'isha Shesatata Tachas Baila. Somebody who violates an Avera is considered to be unfaithful, is considered to not be loyal to their spouse. You're in a relationship with God, you know the rules of this marriage, and yet you're not following them. You are like an Isha Shazinsa Tachas Baila. You are like a woman who has chosen to be unfaithful to her husband, who has now gone with somebody else. In essence, he says, that's what happens every time a person chooses not to abide by the laws of our marriage with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if that's the case, what happens when you have a woman who unfortunately commits that crime, that Avera, and is Zinsa Tachas Baila? She can be as sorry as she wants. Unfortunately, the couple needs to get divorced. I can tell you, this is one of the saddest things to experience as a rav in a community. Everybody makes mistakes in life. The problem is that some mistakes are worse than others. Some mistakes, I can't say they're unforgivable, but some mistakes are ones that we can't fix. Unfixable. When you have somebody who goes on a business trip, who finds themselves in another community without their spouse, ends up doing something that they shouldn't do, and I'm only mentioning this to you because Chacham Eina Berosho. We have many women in this room who are going to be professionals down the line. You're going to go into whatever profession it is, and I'm always amazed when I meet my students in my class, in my shiur, and I get to hear from them the wide array of professional opportunities that they're going to have as they move forward, as they progress, as they grow and mature. And you're all going to be in your own fields. But you need to be aware, it's a crazy world out there. It's a crazy world out there. And we need to be people who are aware of the potential pitfalls. Imagine you have a woman who goes on a convention, on a conference somewhere in San Francisco, and something goes wrong in the hotel one night. If you're laughing at me, I'm telling you, it happens. It happens in real life to otherwise good people. They make a terrible mistake. And then what do? The Torah says a husband and wife cannot remain together. Devastating. There's no way to fix that problem. So says Rav Shimshon Pinkus, when you think about the problem of somebody doing that in their relationship with God, you ask yourself, this is an insurmountable problem. We need to get divorced. What do we do now? To that, the Navi responds in the Navi Yirmiyah, and he says, Shuvi besulas Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls out to us and he says, I will consider you once again like a virgin. Like we never knew each other, like we were never married. You made some mistakes along the way. That's somebody else. But when I talk about the process of tshuva, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is Shuvi besulas Yisrael. The way God refers to us in our relationship after doing tshuva is, you are looked upon as a besula. Like you're starting fresh. Like nothing happened. No need to get divorced. No need for separation. Just an opportunity to ignite a love and an appreciation that we never had for each other before. And that, he suggests, is why the Mazel of Chodesh Elul is specifically a besula. Because it gives us the opportunity to think about recreating and redefining a new relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam that never existed before. Something that is going to give us a chance to reimagine how we want this marriage to look. Which is why, in the David Hashem Ori, when we talk about our feelings toward the Ribono Shel Olam, we say, Lachzos b'noam Hashem ulevaker b'heichal. When you visit somewhere for the first time, you're amazed by it. You're enamored. You walk around. You look at everything. You touch it. You want to see every aspect, every element of what it is that you're experiencing. You want to take it all in. When you become a resident of that place, you're no longer so infatuated by it. I went to the White House a couple of months ago and I was watching how the people who work in the White House don't really realize the sacred nature of the place that they work. To them, it's just an office. It's just the place where they are. But to a visitor, to a person who is not there all the time, you're amazed. You're amazed by what you see. And you start looking in this room and the other room and you're walking around and you want to see how things work. What we ask our Kodesh Baruch Hu is Levaker Behechot. We should always have the opportunity to feel like we are new in this relationship. Like it's something that is fresh. Shuvi Besulas Yisrael is the opportunity of tshuva. There's a famous comment of Rav Simcha Bunami Pshischa, where he said, a person will not be punished for what he did wrong. As we mentioned, everybody does things wrong and everybody makes mistakes. Ashmaso hi she'eino osa tshuva. A person will be punished for not realizing the power of tshuva. That's the opportunity of a lifetime. To take something that gives us the chance to redefine our essence and to be something new. We say it in the Davening on Rosh Hashanah, Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha. Today is the beginning. Hayom Haras Olam. What does it mean? Simple understanding is today is the birthday of the world. This is when everything started. But it means so much more than that. The Bali Musar say a beautiful mashal to understand it. They say there was somebody who had a company, a thriving business, and everything's going really well. And one fine day, he comes into the office and he realizes sales are plummeting. Things are not going well at all. He starts looking over the books and he sees everything is not what he imagined it to be. And immediately he realizes, I need to do something to try to get this under control. So he hires an investigative team to come and make an entire review of his company and his workers and his employees and to see what is happening. I went away for a couple of weeks and all of a sudden the entire business is not running as we imagined it to run. And he decides to go through this very detailed review after a couple of weeks with intensity
and he wants to see exactly where the nekuda of the problem can be found. And he realizes, after a serious investigation, that it turns out all of the faithful workers that he thought he had are not really as faithful as he imagined. All of his senior executives in the company were taking off vacations left and right, flying around the world with their families in private jets, taking money from the company, writing everything off as a business expense. All the people who were working as salesmen really were not doing great customer service. They were not available at the times that they said they would be, and people just stopped purchasing this product. Who wants to be involved in a company where they're not providing a good service? So what does he do? He realizes he has no chance, no choice, but to shut down the company. But in doing so, he announces, tomorrow morning, after we shut down this company, I'm opening the exact same company again, a new entity. He files bankruptcy, declares bankruptcy, closes the company, and the next day he starts again. Who is going to get a job in the new company? Now, obviously, it goes without saying that the people, the senior executives in the company who totally misused their positions, who did not really hold faithful to their jobs and to their boss, of course they're going to be the first ones to go. But how are we supposed to know everyone else in the chain of command whether or not they deserve to be a part of the new and refreshed company? It's on you to prove to the CEO of the company that you deserve to be a part of the business venture moving forward. You need to prove yourself that you are loyal and faithful to the product, that you are loyal and faithful to what needs to be done for the success of this company moving forward. And without that, the onus is on you. There's no chance that you're going to have an opportunity to be rehired. The assumption is that everybody's wrong. The assumption is that everybody's fired. You need to prove your worth and your value and your trust that you belong in this company once again. And the Balei Musar say that's what it means. Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha. Every year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks around the world. I don't know about you, I'm sure nobody here ever looks at the news because you're all too busy and you're all have such pure minds and you don't want to corrupt yourselves. As Chataya Ani Mazkir, I look at the news every day. And for those who are not aware, you know that every single day in the United States, Kimat, is a shooting? Our world is really unraveling. Our world and our society is really crazy. And you ask yourself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made this world, Elohim Asa Sa'adam Yashar, as the Navi writes in Koheles. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in a certain way. All of us were created straight, thinking normally. What happens? The world self-destructs. Comes to Rosh Hashanah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I have to close down the company. This is not working. Everything that I thought would be the output of this world doesn't seem to be materializing at all. Nothing at all is working the way I thought it would. People shooting each other. People killing one another. Everybody suing the next person. Nobody knows who they can trust. What kind of world is this? What kind of world is this? It's an insane asylum. How can this be? HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides every year, let's shut down the company. But tomorrow we're going to start all over again. And you need to prove your worth. You need to prove that you are faithful and loyal to the cause. That's what it means, Zehayom Tchilas Ma'asecha. That's what it means, Hayom Haras Olam. Today is not just the birthday of the world from when everything began with Adam HaRishon. Today is the day when the company is started. Today is the day on Rosh Hashanah when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we are assuming that everybody was involved in this evil scheme of destroying the company. And it's on you to prove to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you can trust him. It's on all of us to prove to the Ribono Shel Olam, no, no, no. We are worthy of being a part of this entity moving forward because you should know what it is that we can invest in your beautiful world. As young, I consider myself a member of your generation. I hope that's not offensive, but I think I'm young, or I feel somewhat young. And as young people, we're often enthusiastic. We're very ambitious. And we have great dreams and great aspirations, as we should.
That's what is really special about being young. And sometimes we have very unrealistic aspirations for ourselves and what it is that we plan to accomplish in our lives. Reb Chaim Sanzer, the first Sanzer Rav in the 1700s,
describes what it was like when he was young, when he was a teenager, when he was an adolescent. And he writes that originally, kishayiti tzair, when I was young, I thought I was so ambitious, I'm going to save the world. I'm going to create an app that is going to be the most used app in the world. I'm going to open a business that is going to be the greatest business that was ever created. I'm going to be the most influential person. Right now we have this new term of influencers. I don't even understand how we go for this as a community, to be honest. Maybe next month we'll talk about it. Not for Chodesh Elul, but it's something that troubles me a lot.
But exactly, ever think of that? Why do you follow an influencer, right? Why do you put your trust in an influencer? What have they accomplished in life to make you want to trust them, other than having a great PR machine behind them? You don't know this person. You don't know what their values are. You don't know what they contributed to the world. You have no idea if anything about their lives is good. All you see is the fake things that they put up to influence you.
Okay, for another time. Reb Chaim Sanzer writes, I'm sure some of them are great, but it needs to be proven. Reb Chaim Sanzer writes, when he was young, he was convinced he's going to save the whole world. He's going to change the world. He's going to be the inspirational figure that's just going to make things the way they should be. And he said, after he got a little older and he had some disappointing moments, and he realized he was a little disillusioned, he came to the recognition that, you know what, I'm just going to be the best father and grandfather I can be, and I'm going to make sure that at least my family, the nucleus of my family, is going to be inspired by my teaching, by my ideals. I'm going to make all them be the people they should be. And then I got a little older, he says, and I realized human beings are human beings and adults are adults. And even though I'm their father or grandfather, I can't force people to do things just because I say so. You know, very often I have parents who come to talk to me about their children who make decisions that are very disappointing to their parents. And the parents feel very uncomfortable, which of course makes sense. But you need to realize your children are adults. And they make decisions in their own lives that are not always going to be your decisions. Sometimes a parent is proud of their child's decision. Sometimes a parent is ashamed of the decision that their parent makes, that their child makes. Sometimes children are ashamed of their parents' decisions too. But everybody's an adult. I don't have control over the way people think or the way people act or react to situations. It's not always in my control. Almost never is it in my control. I can try to nurture my children to be raised in a home and an environment where they'll have a certain set of principles and ideals, but once they go out into the world, I don't have control. And Reb Chaim Sanzer realized, I'm not going to change the world, and I see as I get older, I'm not even going to change my family. And he says, as he got to his old age, he realized, halavai, if only I would be so lucky to try to just change myself. How many people do you know that have really gone through a process of changing themselves? You have somebody who struggles with a certain issue and really works hard to change themselves. It's not an easy thing to do, but that's where it all begins. It begins with realizing that we all have the capacity, we all have the ability to change ourselves. The Torah tells us Uvikashta mishamas Hashem Elokecha umatzasa ki sidrushenu b'chalavavcha b'chal nafshecha.
One of the first writes, Uvikashta misham, we have people who frantically go around the world trying to find ways that they can enhance their lives spiritually. And they'll go here, and they'll go there, and they'll go to this keder, and they'll go to that great person, and they'll want a blessing from here, and they'll go 40 days to this thing or the other thing. And in the end, they're going to realize, in matzasa, you're going to find that ultimately change only comes from inside, from within.
Which is really what all of us try to focus on. To think about the possibility that we all have the opportunity to find the unadulterated, undefiled, to find the virgin self that we all have, that besula inside of ourselves, which is the mazal of Chodesh Elul.
To find that pure person that we are, that we always were, and to realize that we have the opportunity to use this time of the year, this period of 40 days, which is transformative, which is symbolic of that ability to erase what was and to recreate something that will be.
To recognize that although in marriages sometimes one spouse or the other will do something that is an unforgivable mistake that requires the couple to get divorced, but yet in our relationship with God, although it defies all logic, the Mesilas Yesharim writes that when you think about it, how is it that tshuva can work? It just doesn't make any sense.
Tshuva is an impossibility, says the Ramchal. How could it be? Imagine, Rahman al-Islam, you murder someone. You have a car accident. Somebody dies as a result of my not being careful enough, whatever it may have been. You can't bring that person back to life. What's done is done. So how do you wrap your head around the idea of tshuva? What does that even mean? Said the Ramchal, this is all beyond the human comprehension. It is all the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is the greatest gift that He gives all of us. That He allows us and affords us the opportunity to recreate our image, to reimagine ourselves, and to rebuild a relationship that is not one of a spouse that has let down the other side, the other partner, but one of Shuvi Besulas Yisrael, as the Navi writes. And it's our hope, it's our tefillah collectively, that we all have the strength and the fortitude to use this time to the max, to use this opportunity. Kol Dodi Dofek, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calling for all of us to come home. He's asking all of us to hear His cry. He's asking all of us to realize the opportunity that He put forth in all of our lives and to build and to create and to imagine what we want this relationship to look like with the Ribbono Shel Olam as we start that new company, that new business. Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha. What am I going to do to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I am sincere in my commitment to understand that now that the company is restarting, you can trust me. You can rely upon me. Hayom Haral Salam. Now that you're starting everything anew, you can trust that there's at least one person in your orbit, in your sphere, that will actually be faithful to the cause, that will uphold the product, that will bring about positive results. And I can promise you, we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that that's going to be me. I'm not going to be perfect, but I can assure you that I'm going to be someone who you can rely upon, who you can trust. That's what this time of the year is made for. Ashreinu, how lucky we are. Ashreinu matov chalkenu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us this opportunity. How lucky we are to be uplifted together, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu together, uval chulam bibris yachad, to come together as a community, to realize the potential that we all have in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to actualize it to its fullest, and to come to the Yom Narayim this year with a firm commitment to be the people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that He can rely upon, the ones that He knows He can trust, and to use that to the maximum that we possibly can. I wish everyone a Shana Tova, a good night, a Ksiva v'chasima Tova, and thank you all once again.